Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name's Zach, and this week I've got my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing dandy. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I really can't complain today. I think the weather's pretty nice outside, the sun's shining.
Yeah, getting that fall thing going. That's nice, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This week's been rainy, and I hate it. But today we're going to have another talk show. And today we have a very special guest co-host with us today. We have Drew from Tales from Stringersburg. Drew, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us for one of our talk shows today. And I think we're just gonna hop in right into the topics here. No, I'm kidding. Okay. We're gonna talk to Drew here for a second. Drew, for those out there that don't know, can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I, you know, dabble in a little bit of everything. Been doing the podcasts. We just had our 2-year anniversary a few months ago. You know, it's a down on your luck Rust Belt City D-level superhero game. You know, it was originally played probably, I think we figured it was 10, 12 years ago was when the first session started. And
oh, wow. Oh,
yeah, and it was loosely based in like Dr. Horrible, you know, kind of more of those tongue-in-cheek Venture Brothers type settings, The Tick. And we played it for about a year, and then we all kind of went our separate ways. You know, we stayed in touch and everything. And then me and my first co-host, Flocky, just started doing a play-by-post, and I randomly had the idea of, why don't we try this as a podcast? And we've just kind of kept going from there and allowed it to evolve into its natural form, I suppose.
as it does.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm a stay-at-home dad, do the podcast, also have a YouTube channel. I do mini painting. So, and, you know, any and all things nerdy, I'm up for.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm still on some of the early episodes. I haven't quite caught up yet. But what you do is kind of interesting because it's not really an actual play. You're not going through all the mechanics and the dice rolling and stuff. It's more of a recap, right? Is that
that's what it originally started as. And I think, if memory serves, after our 1-year anniversary, actually I take that back, it was when COVID started, we actually moved to a actual play because our schedules kind of freed up a little bit more.
Oh, okay, cool.
And we at the same time, we also switched systems. We went from Mutants and Masterminds to a new system, Prowlers and Paragons.
Ooh, okay. Nice.
I'm assuming, is it made by the same company? Is it like a different skinning of Mutants and Masterminds?
It's if Mutants and Masterminds had a less complicated child. It's by a company called Evil Beagle. And it takes the character creation of Mutants and Masterminds, but when you put it into the actual gameplay, remove 90% of the charts and the crunch that Mutants and Masterminds has, and it's a super streamlined and just it's a system I've been looking for years, and that's one reason why we changed over to it, is because we played kind of so infrequently with the rules. When we went into the Mutants and Masterminds and actually rolled the dice, we spent, you know, half of our time looking at charts and everything, So I'd spent all this time trying to find a more narrative focused superhero system. Like I looked at Masks and Worlds in Peril and a bunch of different things, and happened upon this. And they had just finished a Kickstarter for their second edition, which is getting ready to come out. Like they have a waiting room edition for everybody, but it doesn't have all the art in it. And it's a collaborative storytelling. Like when you roll dice, depending on your successes and everything, like the player gets to narrate, like if they win the roll. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. It's, you don't have to spend all this time looking at charts and everything. It's, we've done a ton of dice rolling with it and rarely ever get bogged down. Like it adds to the cinematic effect of the superhero genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is very helpful. Yeah, because when you're playing a tabletop game, especially a storytelling style tabletop game, you know, I think if you've got so much to refer back to as far as, you know, charts or going and looking at rules or stuff like that, it takes away from that storytelling element so much.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially doing podcasts and everything, like I think that's way more important. I mean, there's editing that you can clean it up and make it a bit smoother, but
I mean, but at some point you're going to go insane.
Yes. Yeah.
Editing out everything. And it's a lot. If you want to make something that's that complicated, you know, if you want to translate that really well into the podcast medium, it takes a lot of work to do that if you have something that complicated.
It has to be entertaining. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want people to listen to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And you know, you ask the question of to yourself, you know, when you're looking at a system, okay, do people want to listen to us go and look through these charts and stuff like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've also experienced this whole kind of finding the right game for a podcast. I guess this wasn't a topic that turned into a topic, but that's the glory of a podcast.
Yeah. True. You know, I had the joy, I would call it, of actually getting in contact with the creators. Like I randomly emailed them, which is something I would never do. Cause I'm a super duper introvert, but I just kind of took a random chance and ended up talking with them and interviewed the head game creator, and the president of the company actually played in a couple of games. Like they played in our second 2 year anniversary game, and the president was to become a permanent fixture, but he, you know, due to scheduling conflicts and everything, he had to kind of bow out of until we can kind of get some things sussed out.
And naturally, as you know, as human beings, we run into frequently.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yes.
So, Drew, what's your history with games? How did you kind of fit into this scene?
I guess my very first exposure was in first grade. I had a friend who was into D&D, and he tried to introduce me to it. And, you know, first grade, I couldn't wrap my mind around it, especially because it was like first or second edition. So, you know, Thaco and all that. So we just kind of
absolutely
winged it and everything. But, you know, I saw it in the periphery every now and then. But growing up in a small town, didn't have a whole lot of exposure. And then when I hit high school, ran into a group of friends and they all played Vampire. So that's what I really got into, was all of the White Wolf stuff, Vampire and Werewolf and everything, because D&D was way too mainstream and I had to be an edgy cool kid and play White Wolf.
Of course. Of course you have to. If you're edgy at all, if you're 1% edgy, you have to play White Wolf.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did that. And of course, you know, when 3.5 came out, or third edition, and then 3.5 very shortly after, ran some of that as well, and, you know, did the constant, oh, I'm going to make my own system because this is cool, but I don't like this, and, you know, the giant headaches, but played all kinds of stuff, you know, GURPS and D&D, Dragon Ball Z, I mean, you name it, I've tried it at least
anything.
Once.
That's awesome. So yeah, it definitely started with that classic D&D, you know,
nice
starting real young, exposed to it. That's really cool.
Yeah. And
I personally wasn't, you know, wasn't introduced until, I was a junior in high school.
Mm.
So I was a late bloomer.
Yeah. And, you know, I read Dragonlance in like fourth grade. That was my big dip into the fantasy genre.
Oh yeah. Dragonlance. That's Just the art style of Dragonlance is just so iconic.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really great. You know, Mark, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm staying out of
started this whole.
I started in high school because it didn't exist before then. Okay, fine. There you go.
We're not saying Mark's old, but he's older than me.
Hey, I can't throw any stones in there. I might be a biscuit older than everybody else, so.
But yeah, it's great. You know, I always love hearing the stories of people who started with something other than D&D and, you know, kind of comes out of the gate with more of an awareness of what's available than just D&D.
Right. And I think
a
lot of it, like I said, growing up in a small town, the D&D crowd was like your typical, you know, what the media portrays as a sweaty, you know, sweatpants wearing guy. That was the literal crowd for D&D around here. So, like I said, all the edgy teenagers had to do something different.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Nice. No, absolutely. What White Wolf games have you played?
Vampire, werewolf, mage, sorcerer, changeling. I mean,
hardcore.
Yeah,
all of the above.
Yes,
yeah,
the everything. Changeling probably has to be my favorite, though. Changeling or mage, just because of how freeform it is. Like vampire, it's like this is what it is, and you're in a city, and you've got sheriffs, and this is what your disciplines do. But changeling and mage are so much more like here's a blueprint of what you can use these for, and then you can be creative outside of that.
Yeah, go have fun kind of thing.
That's awesome.
We really want to play Mage Second at some point in time because I've got the book on the shelf behind me, but I haven't played it.
Mage is so good.
I don't think I've played any White Wolf tabletop. I played some live action, but I don't think I've
played You played any. Live action Vampire back in the day.
Werewolf technically.
Was there
But it was kind of a blend of werewolf and vampire at the same time.
Yeah, because weren't there like multiple games going on?
And yeah, we were kind of overlapping in the same area, so we would encounter each other, yeah.
LARPing?
Which is really cool.
LARPing, yeah.
Yeah,
nice, LARPing. Nice. Did a little bit of that, but mostly played AmpGuard, if you guys are familiar.
Sounds familiar.
I'm not. Tell all the good people about it.
It's, you know, boffer swords, foam swords, and then, you know, you've got spells, and there's classes, and there's level for the classes, depending on how long you've been there, and, you know, giant nerd fest. Wow. I was what was affectionately referred to as a stick jock. I didn't much care for the spells and everything. I was just there to... You guys allow cussing on this podcast?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, I was there to beat ass and didn't really care about anything else. So
nice.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, if you get your rage out some way,
yeah,
you know, that's not completely harming people. I mean, you're harming people a little bit with.
Yeah. Well, I played a barbarian too, so I could rage.
That's great. Barbarian, you said?
Played a barbarian, so I could just rage and, you know, just imagine a live action D&D barbarian. Or I played high level monk, so I was immune to all the spells, so I didn't have to worry about spellcasters.
Oh man, that's great. Well, I think we might hop into a few more topics here.
Sure.
You know, on the back end of things, Mark and I have been talking about superhero games recently.
Ironically, yes.
And it seems Drew might have some knowledge on superhero games in the RPG world. So we might pick his brain a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I personally have not played a superhero tabletop RPG game. I know. You're saying, Zach, you're the host of this amazing podcast. How can you not have played all of the games out there?
Well, it does seem like kind of a weird subgenre of role-playing that, on one hand, it's very kind of a specific niche, but on the other hand, you know, and kind of opening this as a question, what makes a role-playing game a superhero role-playing game? I mean, if we talk about vampire or World of Darkness stuff, you're playing characters with basically superpowers. And, you know, that's kind of true, you know, even D&D, you know, if you're playing a wizard or, you know, there's a lot of super powered stuff in a lot of games. But starting with Drew, what would you say defines a game as a superhero game?
No, and that's a great point, because I feel the exact same way. Like, you know, like you said, D&D, you're doing superhuman things. And so why is that not a superhero game? I think it's about tone, honestly. Like, we usually equate superhero stuff to more of a modern setting, or even slightly post-apocalyptic, depending on the tone that you want to generate. And a lot of people want to default to the well-known stuff, the Marvel and the DC or Image. So it's generating that effect, and it's an incredibly broad genre, but specific at the same time.
Yes.
So it's this weird idiosyncrasy of or juxtaposition of trying to generate the correct feel.
Yeah, because you're gonna have a lot of different tones within the superhero genre. Think of the dark, brooding tone of a Batman versus the bright heroicness of Superman. Right there, you got two pretty wide extremes.
But even if you think about it, though, like, they don't have to be set into these selective slots, you know, because there are all these different takes on, like, the same stories. You know what I mean?
And, well, sure.
And so it's more of a way that things can be interpreted, I think, than them being set into a specific sub genre of superhero. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cause you got the 90s, you know, gritty Iron Age stuff. You've got Golden Age, you've got the four color style, but you can, if you're careful about it, you can marry them all together without any, you know, jarring corners or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you always have the Justice Leagues and Avengers that do exactly that. They kind of blend these different, these characters that have their own different tones and their own titles into a more homogenous world.
Yeah, sometimes I find it so strange that some of these heroes get along. Batman and Superman would not fly ever.
You know, you've got situations like Wolverine where he's in, you know, his own solo series, and then he's also in four different group books at the same time. So,
right.
Right. Oh, let's not even get started on talking about something like Deadpool.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say that the heroes always get along. It seems like almost any time they come together, they have to fight first.
Yeah. Right? The prerequisite hero fight.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We just recently had one of those in the episode that's getting ready to be released.
Nice.
Mark, have you played a superhero? You've played the old DC stuff, haven't you?
I played the old DC Heroes, and I actually played the old TSR Marvel game.
Marvel stuff, yeah. Oh, we talked about that on our, we had a TSR episode.
That's right.
Very nice.
We talked about all the TSR.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, man.
So yeah, I think that's about it.
So you played in the infamous DC one where magic was super duper broken and you could do anything you wanted to.
Sure. I don't remember that, but yeah.
Maybe Mark's players didn't find that out until later.
Probably not. They didn't use that, so. But yeah, I had a good time with that. Character creation always, and if you have some experience with some other games, maybe that's different. But character creation in superhero games seems to usually be pretty crunchy. You know, it was with the DC game.
Yeah,
and I know I've looked at Champions a bit, and that's definitely
it's almost up there with GURPS.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, backtracking a little bit, what you guys were talking about genre wise, like what makes a superhero game, and character creation lends a little bit towards that. Like, you're so broad in what a superhero can be and powers and everything. Like, how do you make a system that doesn't make that crunchy, or that can allow you access but still be balanced?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, one of my favorite ones is Marvel Universe. Came out, I think, late 90s, and it had a stone system instead of dice rolling, so it was all based on effort. It was a super cool system. Like, the books were beautifully done. I really enjoyed it. But if you had regeneration, you were so overbalanced the rest of the characters because you regenerated energy faster. Mm-hmm. So it was one of these, you had to police it if your characters took it, and all this other kind of minutia that bogged it down.
Let me ask you this, on how much you found this with playing superheroes. Another characteristic that I found, anyway, is you seem to have to create antagonists that are much more specific to the characters. You know, you can't just throw a generic dragon at a group. You have to kind of tailor make things a little bit more. Do you think that's true?
To a certain extent, I think you need a handful of villains that are specifically tailored. Like, I have one of our players, the Puppeteer, is a, you know, mind controlling TK character. So if I don't throw a character that's got a high willpower or mental defense in some way, then he just, you know, a snap of a finger and the fight's done.
Right. Right.
So he's got a handful of foils that are either immune or, you know, can do kind of the same thing to him. So, yeah, like, I think overall you don't need to worry about it, but it's those specific ones that cause them to, for their powers to not work the way they want to, that make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because you think, you know, of the classic Professor X and Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
Those are that's a heavy hitting combo right there. You know, when they're against each other, you know, Magneto's got the helmet, so boom. You know, they're contradictory characters,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and also one thing that's cool in the superhero genre that I like to play with in our setting for Stringersburg is both of the players are metas, you know, have genetic powers and everything. So I like to throw, you know, magic at them a lot, or not a lot, but enough where it kind of trips them up, where their characters are uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. Yes.
Because
It's something completely beyond the realm of what they can understand. It's like, well, this works kind of the same way, but we don't understand where the source is and everything. And my players are really good about inhabiting their characters and not letting player knowledge interfere, which I think is kind of key.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to have that kind of that great table dynamic,
mm-hmm.
to where you know your players will respect you enough to, you know, to not metagame and use outside knowledge and stuff like that.
Right.
It's a great feeling.
But yeah, that's also one reason why we went to PNP Prowlers and Paragons, is character creation is so much easier than pretty much any other system. Like, they even have a role to make your character generator in the book.
Mm.
So if you need a quick NPC, like, I've used this a couple of times, and I can make a character in 5 minutes or less.
Mm.
That's cool.
Because it's okay. Like, here's a set pack of stats, roll for their motivation, roll from what their the source of their power is, and what type of powers they have. And then you can just add points here and there.
Oh, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love those systems that incorporate those wonderful tools mm-hmm. for GMs.
Because yeah. one of my favorite superhero games is Godlike, which is a World War II superhero game.
Ooh.
But
okay.
character creation takes forever, and your characters can die like that.
So oh, quickly.
Man. Yeah, you're pretty much a person that's, that has like a power. Balance.
Huh. Okay.
Oh.
But it's a great okay. system. It's so much fun if you ever get a chance.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that then.
Definitely. That sounds fun.
What experience do you have with superhero games other than the two that we've mentioned?
Let's see. I've M&M done Marvel Universe, Godlike, DC Adventures, which is Mutants and Masterminds, but it's the DC specific Mutants and Masterminds, okay. second and third edition, a little bit of Champions, GURPS Heroes, Big Eyes, Small Mouth, which is more of an anime Ooh. Genre, but yeah. the way it's done is, I feel like it's kind of superhero.
Okay.
Masks, okay. World in Peril, which is are both powered by the Apocalypse systems, which are really nice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We almost went with one of those, but translating our characters over for Mutants and Masterminds just was going to be too cumbersome, so we decided not to go with it. And then Adventure from White Wolf is awesome if you like pulp Whoa. Style.
Oh yeah. Oh, I haven't heard of Adventure in a minute.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's I need to look into that again. Drew, you're opening so many of my memories.
awesome. Running the nostalgia machine.
Yeah, man. It's a ride.
But yeah, comic book wise also I have a ton of previous experience. You know, I've got 7 long boxes of comics from my reading, from when I was a kid up to modern, although I've kind of tapered off recently and everything. And I mean, I've got a Green Lantern half sleeve and everything. So I've been, I've been a big comic book nerd for a long
okay,
time.
Okay. So you're the hardcore superhero dude.
Yeah.
Let's get it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, how much do you feel that sort of knowledge is important for, superhero gaming, for example, that kind of...
I think the enthusiasm for it is more important than the knowledge, because if you're too into it, like, I have to separate myself somewhat, because I'm like, well, if I followed this storyline for this continuity, then blah, 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 but I think, like I said, being enthusiastic for this genre is way more important than I've read comics for the past 15 years and know every single storyline and can integrate them without my players knowing, which I've done to a certain extent, more of the obscure stuff, like Grant Morrison or Frank Quietly.
Yeah, that's just something you naturally, you as a GM just naturally do. You'll use inspiration from the things that you know to create stories that you think your players mm-hmm. will enjoy.
As the famous saying goes,
there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. As the saying goes, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Very, very true.
Yeah. A topic that I think could kind of merge pretty well with the superhero genre is urgency during gaming sessions. Mark had an experience. He plays a regular Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah, we had a game. Star Trek Adventures game that kind of spurred this question, and I was playing it, but it seems like this is something that's kind of common in that we had a situation and the game master tribe was trying to create this. Okay. You only have a few minutes and the players just kind of started talking about the ship's going to blow up in 30 seconds. And, well, let's have a discussion about which ships blow up the best, and, you know, which, you know, what can we do, you know, let's go sit down and have dinner and talk about it, you know, and how do you, you know, getting that feel. And I'm curious if part of this, you know, if you're listening to the show, I know I kind of bash on video games, but I wonder if part of that is that video game mentality of, you know, you're on a mission and you have 30 seconds to defuse a bomb. Well, I'm going to go do a side quest and gain some more XP before I deal with that. Yeah. You know, that kind of has, and, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of stuff that takes away from that feeling of urgency. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's any good solutions for a game master to bring that back. Any thoughts?
Yeah. My solution for that is I've actually used that quite often, is you have to set precedent for it at some other point in the game where it's not like incredibly pressing, but you say, well, here's a puzzle or here's a situation, and you keep a mental timer in your head or on paper where your players can't see it. And if they're sitting there waffling and debating, as so many D&D groups do, you're keeping a tally. Like, I'll have NPCs in a room doing something, and while the players are sitting there, I'm like, well, this is real time, and they're sitting there debating, so this is going on, and then this is happening, and, you know, this ritual that they're trying to stop is still progressing, kind of deal. Like, I don't put the game on pause just for that. And I'll start with something small so that it goes into the player's head. And we recently had a chase scene in the podcast, and it was this quick, super fast pace, like things were happening just constantly because my players were aware of how I run my sessions. So they knew that they had to keep progressing forward. Otherwise, the world was going to move past what they needed to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. And that's something I've done as well.
Yeah, but it's a good way to think about it, because it's like, just because you're sitting here at the table, or quote unquote virtually, you know, whatever the situation is, you're sitting with these people and they're doing their own thing, doesn't mean that the world's not doing things at the same time. So yeah, it's a good thing for a GM to think of. Those things can still happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if the players don't want to choose to take that seriously, there are those consequences, you know, whatever you've set up, and they just have to deal with it.
And I mean, I say don't abuse it to the point where you're player punching your characters, but you definitely need to make it a real situation, you know. And that can add to the drama. Like if they've gone through a fight, even if it's a minor one, and they're down on hit points or magic or whatever, that adds to the urgency. That makes this such a more real situation where they're having to be like, we're not at full capacity, but we've still got all this other stuff that we have to do, and we don't know exactly what we're going to face. So I think that puts them on edge even more and is more immersive.
Sure. Sure. I agree with that.
Definitely.
And, you know, there are always some real life interference things that can force you to have to pause at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously those you just kind of have to live with and muscle through as best you can, but.
Right.
But yeah, it's mostly just
frustration.
Sure. But yeah, the idea of that player getting the players to be as immersed into the urgency as possible. You know, I love that idea of having established, you know, once you establish it with your continuity, yeah, that's a good thing. But building that up can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think players are exposed to a lot of situations that don't have that. You know, if they play with other game masters who aren't as pressuring, or, you know, like I say, you know, video games or other game types.
Yeah.
Can be
tricky. Well, and also, if you think about it, you know, just in all of these situations where we're, you know, playing these different characters, you almost kind of feel like you can do anything you want. in whatever way you want. You know, just based, you know, sometimes you get more freedom, so you feel like you can take your time with things.
Mm-hmm.
True.
You know, as a player, because you get lazy a little bit, and you know, I think we're all guilty of that every once in a while.
Yeah, and the system you're working with, I think, also either lends or fights against it. Because if you're using something that's super crunchy and you're like, okay, this is a chase scene or whatever. Okay, well, let's flip between the four charts that we have to look through as to what our movement rate is versus the obstacles, yeah. Blah, 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 or a more narrative system where it's just like, yeah. Okay, you know, roll a handful of dice occasionally and we'll see if you are gaining or losing speed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
The more crunchy, it's very hard to keep that adrenaline up.
Mm-hmm.
Pausing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mark and I are really spoiled as gamers here on the podcast because we have played a lot of 7th C Second Edition.
That's one thing I've always been interested in. I've seen a couple of. It was somebody on Geek and Sundry. I can't remember which show it was, but they played 7th C for a while. And it looked really neat.
Right. I believe for a minute they had. John Wick in there.
Oh, cool.
So I say John Wick. It's not the character. Yeah. There's a man yeah. in real life by the name of John Wick, who is the creator of 7th C Second Edition. But I believe for a minute they had him doing some gameplay stuff with them, which was really cool.
I think there was a couple different like little mini series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could be.
Anyways, but we're kind of spoiled as gamers because 7th C does a really good job of having that action urgency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just kind of builds it straight into the system. Because it's like you do things or there are consequences, and it's like boom, here's how it is. And it kind of takes that away from us,
right.
Which is kind of nice.
And that's something that I've always strived for as a game master, is getting that adrenaline up, getting that feel of you know, being out of breath at the end, like you've just ran a mile, you know,
in a marathon. Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of why I really am a strong believer in kind of trying to convey that urgency and keep that feel. So that, which is why I thought this would be an interesting topic.
Yeah, but, and I've found that a little difficult with the system that I'm running, because if you're doing a superhero genre game, especially even like mid-tier level, normal people are so far below you in the system that it's just like, how do I generate tension without everything being, you know, either more powerful or as powerful? Like, where's the separation, but how do you also connect to the real world?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And I guess that probably comes back a little bit to our point earlier about having target-specific antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do you do that without, you know, okay, here's another 70-foot killer robot, you know, just doing that over and over again.
Right.
So, yeah.
You know, another thing that you could kind of toy with is the thing that, you know, the Avengers series, the Marvel Cinematic Avengers series.
Never heard of
had
it.
Done with, he, never heard of
no.
it. Exactly.
Marvel does movies.
Thanos who? Good one. But the thing that they do with like the heroes versus the people kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like not a super powered antagonist, but you know, you're working against the people that view you as heroes, and then what are you, not heroes anymore?
Yeah,
you know, kind of situation, which I always thought was a cool story arc.
Yeah, and the way we've always kind of approached it in our game is moralistically, with all these powers, how do you handle that as like a person that's transformed into this being that can do all of this stuff? Like, where do your morals begin and end? Like, do you feel justified doing all of this, and why?
How much have you played with the idea of having to control your powers? In role-playing games, it seems so easy to be a murder hobo and super superpowered characters even more so, you know, mm-hmm. flick of your finger, you kill 20 people. You know, it seems like a good way to twist the challenge is to have an underpowered villain that you're forced not to deal with with full power. Is that true? Do you use that technique much?
To a certain extent, where Puppeteer is able to control people, like even if it's not on screen, it's slowly building up because if he doesn't have a cell phone, he's just like, hey, you random person, give me your phone. And then they just hand it over and he walks off and they don't know what happened because they blank out. So I'm like, what's the repercussions of this? And they've recently run into a character who's kind of coming into her own powers and she's becoming a moral compass of like, oh, well, they were talking about trying to get to a hideout and they're like, well, we can just take somebody's car and they're fine with it because Fergus can mind control. She's like, I thought you guys were heroes. Like, why would you do that? That's not something that heroes are supposed to do. And both of the characters just kind of stopped and were like, well, I mean, this is more important. And she's like, is it? Like, doing this to someone, like stealing their car effectively? And they're like, well, we'll leave it somewhere for somebody to find. And they're like, she's like, that's not okay. Like, why would you do that?
Nice.
Yeah. I'm assuming that character is an NPC.
Yes. Created by you.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Great GM tool using the NPC to help reorient the characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and true. You know, these characters have been doing this for so long. Like, this is just how they operate. And it's not that they're trying to be edgy players or anything. You know, the mind controlling guy wants
bad habits.
Yeah, exactly. he's been an outcast his entire life. And he's just like, you know, this is how I operate. This is how I get things done because I'm looking at a larger picture is how he justifies it.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, well, if you're messing up the small picture, aren't you going to mess up the large picture? Kind of. So nice. I'm trying to add like more of a moral quandary into their operation.
Right. Okay. I mean, which is smart to do. Definitely smart to do.
Very, very true. I like that.
Well, Drew, I think we might cap the episode off here.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to tell to the people? Do you want to plug anything? You have the floor.
Man, that's, I mean, of course, I want to plug the podcast, Tales from Stringersburg. We're at the Bergcast on social media, bergcast@gmail.com. If you guys want to get in touch with us, you know, we'd love to hear from everybody. We've got a Patreon, blah, 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 all that, you know, all that normal stuff. But I guess what I'd really want to say is if you're ever thinking about doing a podcast, if you want to do, you know, if you're into RPGs and everything, I say go for it. Like, we kind of started this off as this, I mean, we're still incredibly low budget. We're trying to do what we can with, you know, shoestring funds. But, you know, have a good time. Like, do what you like. And if you're enthusiastic about it, other people are going to want to do it. And it can help, you know, I'm going to get a little, I guess, mushy squishy, but it can help you get over a whole lot of stuff. You know, I personally am a big introvert, have dyslexia and a stutter and everything, and this has helped me a whole bunch. So never be afraid to do something that interests you. That's what I would say. Like, I'm not trying to plug anything, just be bold and don't let fear rule your life. That's completely off topic. Sorry, I went on a ramble, but
no. Hey, we go on rants 90% of the time on this podcast.
That's what half the show is. Yeah.
Yeah, half of our show is rants.
Yeah, and maybe that's why I'm into superhero genres message. And everything. Like, it's all about overcoming, you know, as much as people don't realize it, superhero, you know, comic books and everything have always been about social and moral situations that the world is going through at the time. So, and it's a creative way of tackling those situations.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. And back to, you know, what you said a minute ago, but this podcast started because Mark and I were just like, hey, do you want to start a podcast?
Yeah,
we're
it's like, true.
Okay, cool. You know,
and it's true.
We met on a Reddit post originally, yeah. I believe. Uh-huh. I posted out there because I had just purchased most of the stuff for 7th Sea 2nd Edition. And my at-home group didn't want anything to do with it. So I was like, okay, cool. Hello, internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I reached out. Mark and a handful of other people, we started playing 7th Sea. And then just Mark and I kind of broke off from there and started the podcast. And here we are.
Cool. Yeah.
What, here in just a little bit, it'll probably be, 4 years? So
awesome.
Yeah. Wow.
Congratulations.
Yes. We're going.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
But the other thing is that a lot of, you know, there's room for so much. And, you know, it's not like we're competing. Mm-hmm. It's not like people are going to listen to either your podcast or our podcast.
Right.
People are usually going to listen to a collection. So
multiple different podcasts, because podcasts are usually an hour. And
yeah. So yeah. We're all in this together. We're, mm-hmm. you know, we're not going to be fighting each other over bandwidth, so
right.
So yeah, it's a pretty,
you can download thing. All of our podcasts together,
right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, you can do it all. But anyways, Drew, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah,
it's been a blast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad I got to talk to you guys.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you for joining me like you always do.
Sure.
On this fine Sunday.
You betcha.
And I believe that will be the end of the episode.
And that's it for this episode of Tabletop Radio Hour. Like always, you can find this episode on soundcloud.com/tabletopradiohour and on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter @tabletopcast if you have any questions or comments. You can join us over on facebook.com/tabletopradiohour for regular updates. We also have an email address that is tabletopradiohour@gmail.com. Our website, tabletopradiohour.wordpress.com. You can find information about our Patreon page on our website. I want to thank you all for listening, and keep rolling 20s.